Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's been a long road. I don't know where it's gonna take me. Oh no, I got faith. My fans, my loved ones, my block, my people. Sort of. It's a struggle. You just gotta keep up, keep rocking, keep your eyes on the prize. The other foot in front of you. Never know where life will take you, man. Ride with me.
Back in the 70s, dad jumped a boulder. A little earlier, my grandma raised a daughter. A beautiful thing, she was a ghetto flower. Caught a young man's attention with her power. It was love at first sight, I saw she thought. But a couple months later, he left her with a broken heart. Young and naive, only 17. About to have a young mouth to feed. Head down, she could feel the shame. A couple months later, labor pains. She looked down in her new son's eyes. A flashy smile, as big as the skies. Pop gave it being a man to try. Worked as a mechanic, mama up at Burger King. Meanwhile, late at night, she was studying. She did a thing and she got a degree in chef.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
Flash to the future, now I'm 14. And my pops up and left the scene. Now I'm a young kid, walking the block. And no white man, no, my mama's a cop. They show me no love, a young man locked in handcuffs. Mama always worked in the streets to raise us. Here's the twist, my uncle white as snow. And he's always telling me the right way to go. Until one day the cops took him to, yo. Imagine the pain, conflicted inside. Not knowing whether I wanna ride or die. I get down on my knees and I'm screaming why. I hit the streets like a soldier boy. Running a jacket, clapping an accent. No bastard better happen. But one night, I slept and had a dream. My uncle told me to relax and breathe. And step.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's.
Well, good evening to everyone on the show. Tonight is Worshipful Wednesday, and this is Mountain Man, and I believe we have the Ordinary Woman, Charlie Alejandro. Is you on the air?
I'm here. How's it going?
Good. What's going on?
Nothing. Same old good stuff. We just got back from picking up our Christmas tree, so that was an adventure in shopping for a Christmas tree.
Well, that's a very interesting point. And one thought that I had for a Wishful Wednesday is, what would you wish for, or what do you wish to happen over the next several days leading up to the holiday of Christmas? Or
for me personally, oh man, I would just like to be able to continue to bond with my family the way we have. It's been really great. I mean, the kids are home from college. The only one I'm still missing is Chris, because he'll be done with school on Thursday. And then next week we'll have everybody coming in from Philly and Boston and stuff. So basically, this will be the first time in a few years we're going to have everybody under the same roof for a couple of days. So I think that's going to be fun.
That is going to be great. That is awesome. Yeah, and that was kind of a thought I was having while I was waiting for the show. Is kind of talk about Christmas and you and that and trying to stay on the theme of a Wishful Wednesday. And that was kind of my thought. I didn't know if you wanted to add anything else to a Wishful Wednesday.
No, I just really want people to focus again. I've been saying it all month, just focus on what's really important. Don't get so bogged down with the whole Christmas commercialism part of it, or even Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever day you happen to celebrate or not celebrate. Just really focus on what's really important, and that way you can really enjoy your family, enjoy the events that you go to. If you happen to go to Christmas parties or holiday parties or whatever kind of parties, or if you happen to, you know, hang around with family again, don't get so caught up on all those little details and everything else. Just have fun with it. You know, really get to enjoy it. Really get to sit down. And you know what? The extra gingerbread house can wait. The extra stocking can wait. Just sit down and talk to them. Connect to them. Really get to know them. Make a commitment to get closer in the coming year. I notice a lot of people that get real close during the holidays, and then it kind of fades away by the time January, February comes. I guess
right.
My main wish is for everybody to really reconnect and figure out what's really important in life and appreciate it.
And that's what, and I will reiterate what you just said, and I do wish for a lot of families and relatives and whoever to really try to reconnect over the next few weeks, because I think that is just a powerful time of year for a lot of people, a lot of us, to just be able to reconnect with old friends and everybody. And if anybody wishes to call in, and I know Jolly will do that because she does the best job of it, so I will let you do that part.
As far as the calling in, oh, wait, hold on. I am out of it today. Okay, here we go. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 347-989-1473. Again, the number is 347-989-1473. Or you guys can log on to the website. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman. The spelling for woman is WMN. If you're not near a computer and you're not near the internet, if you call in the number, you can actually also listen to the show on the phone. So if you don't particularly, it'll ask you if you want to actually make a comment or talk to someone here, or if you just want to listen to the show, you can actually listen to it over the phone as well if you don't have access to it. And all our segments are recorded and they are on our segment pages, so you can actually go back and download them, keep them for yourself, or listen. Go back and listen to old episodes we've had in the past.
And that is a great point. That is a great point. And I think today, if I'm not mistaken, weren't we talking the other day, and to just kind of give our listeners a chance to kind of call in and ask any questions that they may have or give any comments?
Yeah, that was one of the things we'd like to do, and we want to get our listeners out there to call in and, you know, to have any comments. But I guess the main thing was that I had a listener email me and says, yeah, you have these interesting guests on the show, and I really enjoy listening to you. And then he kind of called me out there. He says, I really don't know that much about you. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny, because we had thought about doing that in the past. We actually had talked about having a segment where I would get interviewed, and it never happened. So I guess he kind of called me on it. I'm like, oh, I guess maybe that'll be a good time to do it.
Yeah, and I think this would be a good time, and for you to be able to share with your listeners, well, I should say your listeners, but our listeners, and be able to kind of share a few of your thoughts of how it, you thought of the show, how the show became about. Just kind of let us know a little bit of how you got into acting, and because I know it would be very interesting for me to know how the whole thought came about and everything.
Well, it was funny because originally I had always, well, actually, we'll back it up a little bit. This would be the last thing that I ever thought I would be doing as a child, because I grew up very sheltered, very dysfunctional home. So I wasn't very outgoing as far as public speaking. It was very weird. Anytime I tried to say hi to people or talk to strangers, my parents were very obsessive about that. And they're like, nope, you can't be talking to strangers. They're bad people. So it kind of instilled in me a sense that I didn't really like to talk to people. I had a hard time with it. I was very shy. I know a lot of my listeners would be like, really? They would find that hard to believe. But I was very
shy.
Yeah,
and I do find that hard to believe, Charlie.
Oh,
I really do.
I was painfully shy. I mean, it's to the point that I still at times have to fight that. Like, if I'm in an environment where there's a lot of people that are addressing me one-on-one, it's very intimidating to me, and I literally have to talk myself into overcoming that and not reverting back to the shy little girl sitting in the corner hoping everybody just ignores me, because it was very hard for me. I was more of a bookworm. I wasn't really allowed to participate in sports or any extracurricular activities in my school. So it was kind of like, I was kind of like the epitome of the latchkey kid. It was more like, you know, go to school and you'd come home and that was it. That was my life. I had no real activities outside my home. So it didn't really cultivate for what I'm doing now when I grew up.
And I understand that. And I just wanted to, you do bring up a good point, and I just wanted to try to keep that going and just be able to have our listeners have a chance to hear your story, because I know for me, when we first met, I thought you were a very interesting person, but I wanted to be able to go back a little bit before we had met, just kind of because once I got to know you, I know you had gotten into or had been a officer before you had come in to where we had gotten to meet. So I was just thinking that. But I know I do see we have something else here. And I just kind of wanted to see if we could go about that, if that's okay. But I would
funny.
Like...
When I was younger, I think I must have been like 11 years old, I remember running across some pamphlets for the Air Force. And like I said, I grew in a very dysfunctional home, single mom. She had substance abuse problems. She kind of gravitated to different kind of guys that were just as bad as she was. So it was very dysfunctional, very, you know, not a conducive place. So I guess in my mind somewhere was always that epitome of wanting to leave, go away, whatever. And I remember reading this pamphlet for the Air Force, and I really liked it. There was a part of me that was very attracted to the military and that kind of thing, even though it wasn't really something that was supported in my home. But what wound up happening is I got married young just to get out of that environment. So it's funny, I'm going to date myself. Back in the day, some of the military branches, in order for you to serve in the military, if you were married and if you had more than one dependent, your spouse had to sign off on you. They basically had to give you permission to join, and my ex-husband didn't agree with that. He's like, oh, no, there's no way he was ever going to agree to, you know, being stuck at home taking care of all these kids, of our two boys at the time. So I wasn't able to. And then shortly after that, there was actually a radio announcement that they were looking for candidates for the police academy.
Wow, that is so interesting.
It was. I saw that. So what I wind up doing is actually filling out the paperwork. And it was really weird because, talk about being naive, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I wasn't allowed to participate in sports, so I wouldn't be able to tell you whether I was athletic or not, whether I had that ability. And when I did the paperwork and I took my exam, I got the paperwork back, and I wind up actually scoring in the top 2% of all the people that took the test. As a result of that, a lot of departments were recruiting me. They wanted me, and this was back in the early 80s. There weren't that many females on the job to begin with. There weren't that many bilingual females, because I spoke Spanish fluently. So I was getting recruited heavily, and I wound up going to a state organization and going through their academy. But it was a shock to me to see the physical things that we had to go into and to be able to overcome that. I mean, 6 months of training, it really taught me a lot about the things that I had been lied to that I couldn't do. It showed me what a strong person I was. It really helped me overcome my shyness. That's definitely, because you can't be a police officer and be shy at the same time. It's just not going to happen.
Right,
now,
right.
The first time I pulled someone over by myself once I was off training, I thought I was literally going to have a heart attack because my heart was beating so hard in my ears that that's all I could hear. I couldn't even hear myself talk or the person I was talking to. And thank God it was a really nice lady. I mean, she was real nice. She had blown through a stop sign, and I mean, it wasn't like a mad killer or anything, but I was just lucky that it wasn't something serious that I had to deal with at that particular moment. It gave me the courage to, okay, wait, I did this, I can do it again kind of thing. And
right.
Basically that helped me find my voice. It really made me grow. It made me be a stronger person.
That's interesting, because it's like, once I heard that, it's just like, okay, How do you go from one profession to another? I mean, what was, I guess my question is this, is how did you go going from a police officer to into not
what I'm doing now?
What you're doing now, but
right. Well, it's actually what happened was I was a police officer, and the other thing that happened about a year after I graduated from the academy, I wind up, they were looking to form a tactical unit. And it's funny, the way it was worded, it was really funny, because to me it's like, oh, great, we get to go to parades, we get a nice dress uniform, you know, we get all these perks. But they didn't really cover the fact that you had to go through 3 months of training in the heat of summer, and you were actually competing for your spot. So I wind up going in, and when I showed up the first day at roll call, there was 111 guys and me. I was the only female.
Wow.
It was one of these things that I just, I don't know, something in me kicked in and said, I can't back down. I have to stick it out. And I had a buddy of mine that was also trying to be on the unit, so he kind of really helped me through. You know, he helped me a lot. We worked out together. We kind of motivated each other. It. And I'll tell you, it was a tough 12 weeks of training. It was very intense. We did running, we did rappelling, we would jump out of helicopters, we jumped out of windows, we jumped out of towers. We did all kinds of shooting, night operations, tactical operations, self-defense. So it was very demanding physically. And as most listeners know, females don't have the same upper body strength that guys do. So for me, it was over. I had to work out twice as hard to be able to keep up with my fellow officers. And at the end of the 12-week period, the other thing, too, is that I felt that being the only female there, I had to really prove the fact that I deserved to be there. It couldn't be one of these where, okay, you know, it could go either way, like a .5 on a test or a bullet hole less or more on the target. I had to leave no doubt. So that put a lot of pressure on me because I had to make sure that I qualified expert. So if I had 40 rounds to put in that target, I had to make sure all 40 rounds went in. I had to make sure that I had the highest scores on the written exams. I had to make sure that my runs were where they should have been, that I could do every push-up and every sit-up just like the guys did. And at the end of the 12 weeks, there was actually, they had weeded it down to, there was 60 of us left, and there was only 44 spots on the team. And I wound up actually being selected as one of the persons on the selection.
That is very interesting. Isn't it hard to get every shot in the same area?
It is, but again, it's more about training. It's like anything else. Once you learn how to do it, it just comes automatically. But again, it's being able to have the confidence in yourself and knowing that you can do it. It involves the mechanics. It involves the breathing. But mostly it's muscle memory. And that's the toughest thing for anybody to learn anything. Once you learn something, you learn it. Whether you learn it wrong or you learn it correctly, it becomes part of your muscle memory, which means your muscles know what to do to get you to do that. So you have to make sure you learn it correctly or you wind up having to undo a lot of bad habits. And luckily, I got trained by some really amazing people. I had some friends of mine that helped me. So it was just muscle memory. I mean, to this day, I know that I haven't shot a weapon consistently in a long time, but anytime I go to the range, I pick it up, and within a minute or two, it goes right back to it because that's my learning. Like picking up a weapon, handling it, it's just part of what it is. But again, it is. It's difficult, but once you know what you're doing, it's more about the confidence. Because you can have someone that's a really great shooter, but if their confidence level isn't there, they're going to be all over the place.
Well, I just wanted wanted to take a minute here and to welcome a lot of the people that are in our chat room. Be Walters, Betty, 12321, Bob, Frank, 44324, Guest 3546, Guest 3598. JJ3213, Mary4532, and Ted. I just wanted to welcome a lot of the people that are in our chat room. And if you have any questions, please feel free to call in to our call-in number, which is 347-989-1473, or you can do our website, which I will have Charlie do again for us in a second. And
www.blogtalkradio.com, and it's /ordinary woman, and woman is spelled WMN. So if you have any questions, you can do that in the chat room as well. You can listen to us on the internet, or if you don't have the chance to, this is the first time, you can go back and listen to some of our old shows.
That is a great opportunity. And I just wanted to also, going back to what we're talking about, everyone, we are just talking about average people, and we are talking with Charlie, the host of Ordinary Woman, and we are just kind of getting a little bit of a background on how she became a talk show host, and how she got some other people involved. And I believe we do have a caller. Let me click him in because I recognize the number from earlier. Good evening. You're on the show, Diamond on the Rough show, with Mountain Man and Charlie Alejandro. Who is this, please?
Mountain Man, what's going on? This is Crosby Tatum calling.
Hi, Crosby. How are you? It's nice to finally connect with you.
Indeed, Charlie. It's been a moment in time to get in touch with you. Mountain Man, how's everything?
It's going good. Crosby and I, for our listeners, we've actually been playing Facebook tag for like a month and a half now because I'm dying to have him on my show. That's good that I have you, Crosby. You want to tell our listeners about your premiere and what you have in the works?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, for those who don't know out there, my name is Crosby Tatum. I'm the co-executive producer, CEO of Tricepta Studios in Boston, Massachusetts. And we recently just had a premiere of our television pilot we've been working on for about a year now called All for One. It's a female-driven sitcom, you know, based on the lives, the wild and wacky lives of a mixed-race female, her womanizing boss, and her freeloading half-brother.
I know. It's wicked funny, though.
You know, it's a ton of fun. It's a ton of laughs. It really gives you that old feeling of the sitcoms from back in the day with a new era feel. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's very hip, very engaging, and you know, once you see it, you're just gonna laugh. You're gonna think. You're gonna cry. You're gonna be overall entertained with the characters that we bring to the table.
That's excellent.
Wow.
Now, where can our listeners go see that?
Well, our viewers, the listeners, if you guys are listening right now, you guys can check out the pilot at www.allforone, that's A-L-L, the number 4, O-U-R, 1.com, and you can actually check out the pilot, full 20 minutes of it, and basically also you'll be able to see a behind-the-scenes look at the footage that we shot, including the craziness, including me trying to strip on, you know, but behind the scenes. But you can actually go online and you could definitely check out the pilot there. And also, there's just a number of Tricepta Studios projects we got going on right now. And
mm-hmm.
And basically, for right now, you guys can just go check out allforone.com, and hopefully you guys will like the pilot.
That sounds excellent. I cannot wait to have you on the show because I know you have some amazing things going on and you get some things down the works.
I can tell you guys a myriad of things that's going on with Tricepta Studios that like a lot of people don't know. And one of the key things is just, you know, just really just trying to, you know, tell people about, hey, you know, we got nothing, we don't really have anything, but yet still we find a way to basically get to point A to point B and to point C to the end of the points, really.
See, and that's what I like, because a lot of people think that they have to have all this money and all this stuff to make things happen. I'm telling you, where there's a will, there's a way. That is just an amazing philosophy, and I've seen that happen with you guys, with what you're doing and what you've been able to accomplish. I mean, I've heard a lot of good buzz about your show. Now, there's also that the possibility that it might be picked up on a more national level, not just local.
Yes. We have a signed letter from Colors TV out in Englewood, Colorado, people that I know who work at the network, they actually like the pilot and they want to see more episodes of All for One nationally and 19 million homes nationwide, and of course online at allforone.com. They like to see more of us. The key problem that we're faced with is just producing more of those episodes, because it took a lot of resources on my end to put that together, and to duplicate that for over a certain amount of episodes is kind of challenging. At least, so.
Oh yeah, absolutely, because it does. So if there's anybody out there with a big checkbook, they're more than welcome
please,
to contact Tandem and help me get them in here.
I got business plans.
Oh yeah, he's got business plans. So yeah, thanks for calling, though. I'm so excited. Now you definitely have to hit me up online. Make sure you email me, because I'd like to set something up in the next week or so, especially since you just had the premiere. I want to make sure we talk that up and get you out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And also, just to let you guys know, we also started our music label, Triceptus Music, and check us out at music.triceptus, T-R-I-C-E-P-T-U-S.com. Check that out. And I don't want to take up any more of you guys' time and everything like that. So,
a problem. I'm glad you called. Like I said, we've been playing Facebook tag for like 6 weeks, so I'm glad you did. But definitely email me. You have my email, so hit me up. Send me your bio, and then I'll just get the segment page up, and then I will let you know what time and what day so we can have you on the show, because I'm really looking forward to it.
Charlie, no problemo.
Awesome. Well, you have a good holiday.
You too. You have a Merry Christmas, Melman. You have a Merry Christmas as well, sir.
Thank you, and you too. And
right,
thank you for calling.
Definitely. Thanks for accepting my call.
You're welcome.
All right.
Have a good one.
Right,
I'm telling you, to our listeners, and Melman, we were talking about this the other day. It's just amazing the caliber of people that we have listening to the show and just our guests. I don't know. I'm just overwhelmed with the amazing caliber of people we have that come out of the woodwork, and it's just awesome people doing amazing things.
Well, yeah, and the amazing thing is, and I was just listening to one of the previous shows earlier this afternoon. I was just going over one of the shows that I can click into, and you had mentioned somebody from Australia coming in.
Oh, my goodness. I have this guy named Bob from Australia, which I thought it was funny because my son is really big into Australia, and I guess there's a time, obviously, there's a huge time difference. So he's up, like, in the middle of the night listening to our show, and it was pretty funny to me because, I mean, I understand people can go and click on it anytime they want, but he actually was listening up to us live a couple of times. And Bob, as a matter of fact, is in our chat room right now. And hey, out there to my friends over in Australia. I just thought it was amazing that someone from way over on the other side of the world is listening to us. It just blows my mind. I mean, it shouldn't, because that's what a radio show does, but I just thought it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, and I want to say hello to everybody who is listening in Australia. And please feel free to come into the chat room and say hello and all that. But it was just... it just amazed me when we were talking that a lot of it's getting out there. It's getting to a lot of different points, and a lot of people are tuning into our show and listening to our show and participating at time to time. And it is fantastic to hear that we've been growing so much over the last few months here that we've had the show.
For me, it's funny because for me it's something that I've been wanting to do for a while, because like I said, I was a police officer, and then I wind up, actually the reason you asked me earlier how I switched careers was that I wind up getting remarried, and at the time we got remarried, this is so funny, we were like the new version of the Brady Bunch. I had four boys that I had from my first marriage, and my husband now, he had two boys and two girls, so we had eight kids, and they were ranging at the time when we decided they were getting serious and we were going to get married. They were ranging in ages from 15 down to 18 months.
Wow.
My husband's youngest was 18 months, and even though my youngest was 7 years old, I mean, he was actually 5 years old. They were close. I mean, we're talking about eight children between the ages of 15 and 18 months. And at that time, my husband was doing undercover work. He was a police officer, too. I was doing undercover work. So you have to kind of take a step back and say, what is the most important thing for me to do at this particular moment? And mm-hmm. for me, you have to think about the fact that you're taking two families that are basically broken, and I use the term broken because when you get divorced, there's a breaker. There's a break in there, and, you know, something didn't happen. And a lot of that something didn't work. And a lot of times, I call them the silent victims of divorce, are the children. Because we get so wrapped up in, I hate you, you hate me, we can't get along for whatever reason. And I don't care how friendly a divorce is, the children still suffer. So one of the things
right.
that I stepped back and thought about was the fact that what could we do as a couple to make sure that we could heal the wounds that these children had gone through, to try to
mm-hmm.
get them as a family. Because it's huge. You know, you go through a divorce, and then, well, for me, my boys, I had already been divorced for a few years. My husband was going on being divorced for about a year or so because his son was very young, as just an infant when they separated. But still, when you're bringing two families together, two different sets of values, two different ways of doing things, it's very easy for someone to fall out of the woodwork. It's very easy for somebody's feelings to get hurt. It's very easy for someone to feel, well, okay, my customs or my way of doing things aren't as important as everybody else's.
That is awesome.
Yeah, one of the things that came out of it was that you can't maintain that crazy schedule anymore. You know, I can't continue to be working 50, 60 hours in a high-stress job as a police officer. So what I wind up doing is after I got out of the undercover unit, wind up actually working in the registry, and a couple years later, I actually just took an early retirement from the state police. And that's when I started saying, okay, what are other things that I could do with my life? Because I still had a lot to offer the world. I felt like I had a lot to offer the world, and I wanted
and
to show my
do.
Children that. Yeah, I felt that I wanted to show them that they could think outside the box, and that's something that my husband and I have constantly done. When my children were younger, if you ask them, what do you want to do when you grow up, their answer was always, be rich or run my own business. Or if you ask them, oh, what job do you want to work? They'd be like, I don't want a job. I want a career. Or I want a business. Because that's what we tried to teach them. We tried to teach them that you can do anything you want if you're willing to work for it. And I wanted them to also show them that you didn't have to work at something that you did not like. You shouldn't be miserable when you wake up in the morning to go to work. You should be pumped up and excited about what you're doing. And if you're not, maybe you need to reevaluate the situation. Because life is way too short for you to be angry or upset or dreading going into work every morning. It shouldn't be like that. And I know a lot of people say, oh, what planet do you come from? The reality is that if you ask someone that really loves their job, it's not work to them. They enjoy going into the office or into their store or into whatever. And that's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be able to lead by example and say to my kids, okay, I'm telling you you can do this, but I'm going to show you what I've done with it.
Right. And what inspiration would you give those people that are listening, however they may be listening, but what kind of empowerment would you give them to pursue their dreams?
Honestly, for me, and I tell this to everybody that I run into, you've got to let go of the fear. I think there's a book out there called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, and that has always been one of my mantras because of the fact that you're going to be afraid no matter what. You are.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way around it. Anybody that says that they're not afraid is full of baloney, because I've met some of the toughest cops in the world, and they will tell you, yes, I was afraid in that situation. The difference between a hero and a coward is that the hero doesn't let people know that he's afraid. That's the only difference. They're still able to function with the fear and come out ahead. So for me, that's the reason for the show. That was the tagline, don't let anybody steal your dreams away, because you cannot give in to what other people want for you. And I know it's tough because when we're parents, oh, I know better for what's best for my kids. Yes, for some things you do. You know, like you can't let your kid eat a pound of brownies by himself because he's going to get sick. But by the same token, if your child wants to do rap music instead of gymnastics, you need to realize that that's their life. And as painful as it might seem, it's not a bad thing. I mean, if they have musical abilities or if they have other abilities that you're not particularly fond of, if it's a positive experience and you're going to make the world a better place by sharing your talent, you need to let them do that. And for me, my thing is to not be afraid. I tell my kids, like my daughter, Jessie, when she went up to college, I remember her asking me a question. She's like, well, what if I'm not good at it? Said, well, you go find something else that you're good at. And you know what? You don't have to be good at it. I mean, if you want to take up dancing and you're not the greatest dancer in the world, but you have fun with it and you have joy in your heart when you're in dance classes, go for it. Because that's what it's about. It's not. It's about being able to live your life with no regrets. And a lot of people always think that when I say that, they have bad connotations. They think that, oh, well, that's reckless. I didn't say go out and get drunk. I didn't say go do drugs. I didn't say go abuse people. I didn't say go be mean. Living without regrets means that if you say to yourself, wow, I wonder what it would be like to do fill in the blank. If you never get over the fear and you don't go and do that, that's regret. Because guaranteed, somewhere down the road in your life, you're going to be sitting somewhere when you're older saying, dang, I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that.
Right.
Do it. It's never too late. It is never too late. I'm not saying that you're going to go be a professional baseball player at 45, but that doesn't mean you can't find a competitive men's league at that age where you can play and still go, wow, look, I still got game left. That's what I'm talking about there.
Right. And it's been a very interesting time. And because you're right, Charlie, not being afraid is one of the things that I've had to learn the biggest in my life too. So I know right where you're coming from, and you're right. That is one of the greatest things to really overcome is fear. And as we both said it, we need to work on our fears because we all have them, and you need to work on them.
You do, and the thing is, it's funny because I know for me, there's a lot of people that have phobias, and I was one of them. I remember growing up, I was petrified of heights. I wasn't like, you know, be paralyzed of heights, but they frightened me. Stairs, certain stairs where you have those, you know, things where you could see through and you can look down. But you know what? When I was competing to be in the tactical unit, I had to jump out of a tower that was 150 feet tall. I had to jump out of a window. I had to jump out of a helicopter. So that's when you say, okay, yeah, that's when you sit there and you say to yourself, okay, I am afraid of heights, but I want to be on this tactical unit. Which am I going to let be more important to me? So my thing was that in order for me to overcome my fear, I said to myself, I can't think about it. So when they were doing the first time we were repelling, I said, okay, I'm going up first. And I literally ran up the stairs to climb to the tower to get it over with. And I guess because I didn't give myself time to talk myself out of it, I was able to do it. Funny thing is, years later, I find out from other guys that were there, as a matter of fact, a couple of them said to me, if you had not gone first, we would have quit right then and there, because they had that same fear. But in their mind, it was like, they said to me, they're like, and they even jokingly said, oh my goodness, the chick did it, now we got to do it.
Now that is very interesting. Because if you don't take the first initiative, then others that are behind you are going to take that same approach. And I look at you, and for as long as I've known you, you have helped me to overcome a lot of my fears as well, because I've had a lot of fears myself, and just getting to know you as well as we do know each other, I've gotten over mine, and it's been an awesome time to get to know each other and hang out with each other and all that good stuff.
And you know, and the funny thing is that's one of the things that really hits me, because we don't know when we're influencing people. We really don't. Remember, a lot of times we don't get the opportunity to thank people for it, but I remember when I wanted to be a police officer and I went to Cambridge Police Department to pick up the paperwork, there was this woman there, one of the few police officers, females at the time, and her demeanor and the way she presented herself just blew my mind. This is obviously a woman that took pride in her appearance in a good way. I mean, you could tell she was a woman. You know, she had her hair done and she had a little bit of makeup on, but she looked the part in uniform. She's very professional, very nice. And that was who I channeled myself after when I was on the police force. And I remember having the opportunity 15 years later working in an undercover operation where I actually was working with Cambridge PD. And I ran into her and I remembered her. And I remember me being able to say, you know, I want to thank you because of this. And she said to me, I never thought that something so little as taking pride in my appearance or whatever would influence somebody. So here's a tiny little detail that she didn't even think anybody was watching, and she made a big impact. And I've had that situation happen to me where I've done something or said something, and then years down the road, someone's like, oh, yeah, I remember running into you here or that. And it's not just me, people, and that's one of the reasons why I really felt compelled to do the show, because everybody does that. Whether you realize it or not, good, bad, or indifferent, your actions will make an impact on people. Now it's up to you if that impact is going to be good, going to be bad, is it going to be positive, or is it going to be negative? That all depends on you.
Right.
You have to remember that it's kind of like being on your best behavior kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's hard because we're humans, but, you know, when you smile at that person that looks miserable, you might be the only person that smiled at them that day. Or another example I'll share with you, with the listeners, is I remember one time as a police officer, we wind up in a pursuit. That means that we were chasing a car that was driving very fast, very dangerously, recklessly, so we wind up pursuing this person to get him off the road. Now there's like five cruisers following him. He's in and out of traffic. 20 minutes later, we finally get him out of the car, get him in handcuffs, and trying to figure out what is wrong with this person. I mean, he wasn't drunk. You could tell that maybe he had been drinking, but he wasn't drunk. And one of the things that got me was that his fist was clutched. Like, he had his right hand was clutched really tight. And we got him back to the station, and he's just sitting there, and he's bawling. Like, he's just crying. And male officers, for the most part, don't want to deal with emotions, don't want to deal with tears. So I sat next to him, and I just said, are you okay? What's going on? And finally, I got the guy to tell me that his son, who was only 2 years old, had just been taken off life support and had died. And he just didn't know how to deal with it. He said, I felt like I wanted to die. And I remember just talking to him, and it wasn't like I had any great words of wisdom or anything, because I was fairly new on the job. My listeners remember I told you how shy I was, so it wasn't something that came easy to me. But I remember saying something to him to the effect of, yeah, but your wife also lost a child. You can't have her lose a husband, too.
Right.
And that kind of snapped him out of it. And I remember even I went over and talked to the sergeant, and my sergeant was like, oh, my God, this is horrible. And I remember one of the police officers was like, I don't care what's going on. This person broke the law or whatever. And we're looking at him like, really, dude, you know, you really need to get in touch with feelings because this man just lost his baby. So we wind up, you know, calling somebody to come get them, the whole thing. So it goes to show, and I remember years later, his wife actually wrote a letter to my captain thanking us for the way we treated her husband with dignity and respect. And, you know, she said that she thought that if it hadn't been for the way we talked to him, he would have probably killed himself.
Wow. Wow. That is just an amazing story there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is interesting. And I think one thing that I would say to our listeners is get to know the public safety office. Public safety people in your town and in your city, and just be respectful of them. And just remember them at these times of years, or excuse me, at these times of months, that they are out there protecting us. And I know for me.
For you, what?
And I know for me, knowing that you're an officer, I'd like to thank you for protecting us as citizens when you are on the force.
It's funny, though, and this is something my husband and I are always joking about because he's still a police officer and I'm not. And it's great that, you know, the police officers do risk their lives. Firemen, I think, are just absolutely crazy. And there's a running joke that says God created firemen so cops could have heroes. And a lot of my cop friends think it's funny. But it's true because, police officers, you have a gun, you have a bulletproof vest. You know, firemen are just nuts. They're running into burning buildings. They're looking for people in pitch black. They don't care who's in there. They will stay in a building to find your cat and your dog. I mean, those are just amazing people to me. But the other thing that goes beyond that is when, you make a good point about getting to knowing the people in your town. I learned the lesson a long time ago, too. You need to get to know people in menial jobs. And I hate the term menial jobs because I think no job is menial. Anybody that's earning their keep in an honest way, there's nothing menial about it. If you get up to go to work and I don't care if you're cleaning toilets or you're performing brain surgery, you have a service and you provide a service, and there's nothing meaning about that. And I remember a gentleman that I knew when I was working with my mom, he went out of his way to know every person that worked cleaning up, who the cleaning lady in the office was, who the janitor was, who was the guy that picked up the trash. He knew them by first name. He said good morning to them. He acknowledged them as human beings. And it really hit me because he had respect for people that other people don't, that look beyond them like, oh, well, that's just the cleaning guy. And I remember one time he was having a conversation with someone that I happened to listen in on, and he said, I have respect for everybody that works hard because my mom spent, I think he said, 40 years on her knees scrubbing other people's floors to support him and his brother and sister because their dad died and his mom had to provide for them. He's like, and if it wasn't for my mom, who was just your average cleaning lady, I wouldn't have been able to go to college and I wouldn't be working in these offices on the other side of the desk.
Wow.
And that was another thing that stuck with me. And I think that's where the seed for this show started, the ordinary woman concept, because it really made me realize that there's no ordinary people. Everybody has a story. I don't care how many times you point to somebody and you say, well, that's an average person, your mom. There's always an interesting story. There's always something there. They've touched someone's lives. They've changed someone's lives. They've done something, no matter how much of inconsequential you think that person is, somehow, somewhere, they have changed someone's life for the better.
That is very true. That is very true. Now, there was one other question I had that you had kind of touched on earlier in the show, was as you were a police officer or changing professions, what powerful words would you give for those people who would like to maybe become an officer or become being interested in that type of field?
For anybody that wants to be in law enforcement, I have to tell them off the bat, you got to pick a side. Because when you work in law enforcement, when you work as a firefighter, when you work in an area of public safety, the public is counting on you. And when the public is counting on you, you need to have integrity. And there's no two ways about it. You need to be in there because you want to serve the public and you have good intentions in serving the public and not what's in it for you. Because otherwise, you're in the wrong business. If you're out for what's in it for you, then you need to go be, a business owner that only worries about making money, maybe a stockbroker, that kind of thing. Because the reality is, you don't become a police officer to be rich, because you're not. Yes, every day, every year, everybody's like, well, police officers make, so much. Yeah, but they also have to work the hours. If you see the local papers that have the yearly thing where, oh, this officer made over $100,000 a year. Yeah, but that officer also worked 80 hours a week. It's not like it was handed to him. And it's not like sitting down doing nothing. They worked for it.
Mm.
So you really have to decide what you stand for, because you cannot do both. You cannot be a police officer and arrest someone for driving drunk, and then you go out and get drunk with your friends and drive home drunk. Because what, you think you have a get out of jail card for free because you're a cop? It doesn't work that way. The other thing you're going to have to realize is that once you decide to become police officer or in any form of law enforcement, you're going to lose a lot of your friends because they have different mindsets. You can't be a police officer and go out with people that are smoking pot or doing drugs or illegal activities because you're compromising yourself. And never mind the fact that if you are actually doing drugs or if you are stealing or if you think that, okay, we did this drug raid and we confiscated $10,000. No one's going to know if I skim, you know, $500 or $1,000. That makes you that makes you worse than the criminals. Because the criminal sitting in court, everybody knows he's a criminal. But you're up there testifying and you're behind your badge and that criminal's looking at you. He knows how much money was in there. And he knows you stole money from him. That makes you the biggest hypocrite and a bigger scumbag. And I use the term because that's the only way I can think of, because this person isn't hiding the fact they're a drug dealer, but you, as a police officer, are hiding the fact that you're a crook because you're hiding behind your badge, and you cannot do that sooner or later. And those little few, thank God 90%, 95% of the police officers are really good, hardworking people, but there's that 1% that ruins it for everybody. You hear the story of the cop that, you know, stole this or got hooked on drugs or whatever. You know, you got to really decide what you're going to do. You got to maintain yourself physically fit. I know there's the joke that, oh, I saw this cop and he weighs, you know, 300 pounds. It's not so much for the appearance. Yeah, you look great in the uniform if you're in shape, but it's for your own safety because you need to get out of the way quick. I mean, I got plowed into, and I'll never forget this, it was a raging snowstorm, and I got plowed into by a pickup truck into my cruiser. And thank God I had the physical ability to crawl out of the cruiser because the doors were jammed. I could not get out. So it's things like that, or the time that my buddy and I were having someone pulled over on the side of the road and a drunk driver almost plowed into us. Thank God we were quick enough to get out of the way, or we would have both been wedged against the other vehicle. So you have to be physically fit. You've got to stay in school, get the decent grades. Nowadays, unless you have a degree, chances are you're not going to get the job as a police officer. You have to have at least an associate's degree because it's very competitive, especially now with the war in Iraq. We have a lot of veterans coming back, highly qualified, highly trained people that, because of their veteran status, will get preferential treatment, as well they should because they've earned it on the police exams and firefighters' exams. So it's something that you have to think about, and I'm telling you right off the bat, it's not CSI Miami. It's not CSI nothing. It's 90% of it will be hard paperwork. It will be hanging around, doing investigations, talking to people that do not want to talk to you. And then maybe you'll get the 5% of the high-speed chases and, you know, chasing people. And like I said, I drew my gun a lot because I was in a tactical unit. The average police officer will maybe draw his gun once or twice in their whole career. And that once or twice is the time that you have to be ready because that means someone else is shooting back at you.
Wow.
So it's definitely a career that you have to be very committed to. It's not something that you do just because you do it. It's almost like a way of life. It really becomes that.
Wow. Well, I have to say you're a very interesting person, and we will have to bring this top or have you talk about some more of your experience down the line here. But I do want to take a few minutes and talk about what's going to be coming up over the next little while, if we could, for our listeners to be able to.
Yeah. We've got a lot of good things coming up. Like, I know for next year, we're already talking about it. Our show is actually, we're actually expanding. First of all, I'd like to let our listeners know, starting January, let me look at the date. January
14th.
That's right, January 14th, we're gonna have set times, so we're actually going to 2 hours. Our show is expanding to 2 hours, and actually our show will be the regular days in January are going to be Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Wednesdays? Or was it Mondays?
I thought it was Mondays.
Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. That's right. That'll be our regular show. And that, so from now on, for our listeners, make sure you mark it down. Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays from 7 to 9. That'll be the Diamond in the Rough show. And we've got a lot of things in the works. We've got more music coming up. We've got more guests coming up. And one of the other things we're going to be doing eventually, we're actually going to probably be expanding to 5 days a week because we just have so many people that are amazing and interesting, and we just can't wait to have them on the show. So I'm really excited about that. This Friday, 7 o'clock, we're actually going to have, got to get our way through it. We have this amazing singer, so we can actually talk her into doing a little a cappella when she's at the interview. You guys will get a feel for what an amazing singer she is. But she's actually, her name's Jessica Alejandro. She is one of the, part of the CPR family. She is actually on that song that we play a lot, Legendary. She's actually the singer on that. So she also is a ballroom dancer. She's a gifted athlete in high school. She's up in college right now, and so it'll be real nice to get her in here, give her some of her life stories to share. Very interesting guest. I'm really looking forward to it.
I can't wait to hear her stories either.
Yeah.
I really can't. And it would be very, very interesting to hear her sing as well.
Yeah, and Crosby, who called in today, we're hoping to get him up here next week. That'll be awesome. Actually, December 25th, which is Christmas Day, we're having a family special. My sister-in-law, they always have this big Secret Santa thing, so we're actually going to be broadcasting live from there. I think it'll be fun to do that. And, yeah, get a little feel for that. And then also we have Macklin Guzman. He is amazing. He is a medical administrator out of Florida. We're supposed to have him on the show last month. That's when we were having all the glitches, so I had to reschedule him. So I'm trying to get him in this month. I cannot wait to get him on the show. I also have a nonprofit organization out of California. Angels Inc., they're going to be on there too in the coming weeks. So, yeah, we have a lot of amazing people coming up.
And that is awesome. That is really awesome. And again, I want to thank you for sharing your story, because I think, as you alluded to me earlier off the air, that you had shared that you interview everyone else, but who's going to interview you, and when were we going to be able to do it? And I thought, and as you know, I was trying to figure out what we were going to talk about tonight, and lo and behold, we got that interview done.
Yeah, I figure we'll get it out of the way now, because, I mean, and again, to our listeners, I am just humbled and overwhelmed at your reception. I mean, it's just amazing, the emails coming in, and just the love that everybody has been giving us. It's just amazing, and just for people to want to know. Also, for our listeners, if you're more interested in getting a little bit more feedback on our family, if you go to my blog, www.ordinarywoman.com, that'll take you right to my blog. There's a lot of entries there. Actually, there's introductions to my family. If you click on the right-hand side, there's a little thing that says introductions to the family. And there's a little, actually, I did a little bio and story on each of my family members on there, and myself and my husband, so you can actually get more information on me there. Also, if you are interested in the humorous side of my thing, I also have, if you go to my blog, there's also Dog's World, which is kind of like a satirical type of blog about my dog, because he's the funniest-looking dog that we have. And I have to say, I have my friend Bridget on here, Ms. Walters. I have been dying to see you forever, but she's on there. I got to have you on the show, too, because I just love her. And Colby, oh, my gosh. Her son is, like, the smartest kid I've ever met. I mean, I remember having a conversation with this child, and I totally forgot that he was only a child, because that's just the way he is. Real funny. Glad that you could stop by and hey, yeah, I love you too. So, yeah, so thank you so much for everybody for joining us. Mutt Man, thank you so much for the interview. I really enjoyed it.
You're welcome, and we will see everybody on Friday?
Yes, Friday, 7 o'clock. We'll have Miss Jess on the show, and remember, people, do not let anybody ever steal your dreams away. Have a good night. And I'm going to let you out with the song Flake by Leah Eaton, one of my guests that we've had on the show. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.